proceed, please do so. And if you wish to reserve time, please so state.
May it please the court, my name is Anthony Kay, and with me is Sylvia Semper, counsel for the appellant. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
What this case is about, ultimately, is it's a Shadowwood case. The sale was for a grossly inadequate price, which an unfairness contributed to that low price, which in this case was $4,000. The taxable value of the property, which the court took judicial notice of, was $57,000, and $4,000 is 7% of the $57,000. The note, incidentally, in the case was for $196,000. What makes this case different than other cases is that the parties on both sides of this transaction believed that the transaction would be subject to the deed of trust. So the auctioneer and the collection agent, which was National Association Services, before it conducted the sale, and as part of the testimony and record in this case, testified that when it conducted these sales, it believed that they were sales that were subject to the lender's senior deed of trust. The auctioneer herself said that when she went in to conduct the auction, in this case, like auctions that were being conducted at the time, that the understanding of NAS was that the sales were being conducted to the deed of pursuant to the deed of trust. Likewise, the buyer in this case had the same understanding. The buyer understood that what he was buying was subject to the deed of trust and testified that the reason that the price was so low was because the purchase was subject to the deed of trust.
But Mr. King, the lender, Wells Fargo's deed of trust, specifically exempted any super priority liens. So certainly Wells Fargo didn't believe it was not subject to any super priority liens.
No, Wells Fargo did believe that it was subject to a super priority lien. I don't believe Wells Fargo. I think Wells Fargo was under the same impression as everybody else at the time that the sale wasn't going to wipe out its deed of trust, but that the proceeds of an HOA sale would be used first to pay the HOA super priority, and then to pay Wells Fargo, and then to pay collection costs. So what I would like the court to focus on, and what I think makes this case different and unique, is that there wasn't an HOA sale. The HOA sale wasn't conducted with everybody at that sale, and Wells Fargo wasn't there, but the people who were there didn't believe that they were conducting a sale that was going to wipe out the deed of trust, which resulted in the low price. If you're buying property where you believe that it's going to be clouded by a deed of trust, and if you're selling property where you believe you're selling it subject to a deed of trust, the problem that you have is that there's no reason to try to sell the property for more than the HOA.
Was there something about the sale that was that would invalidate it? Because I know this case is interesting. Judge Crockett had a bench trial, so you've had a full trial on this. We get these on summary judgment motions, and sometimes there's issues of fact and all in there, but you've been through that process, so I was interested in the irregularities with the sale. Secondly, I believe Wells Fargo was doing a judicial foreclosure on the property at the time.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Why were you doing that? Why weren't you doing a private foreclosure? Why would you do something with the one-year right of redemption on it? I mean, I don't understand that.
The record, but the policy at the time for the servicer was to conduct judicial foreclosures because they believed that they were more fair and they were going to resolve the situation more fully without the possibility of subsequent litigation. I mean, in addition, a fact that goes to fairness all around, and I'll get to that, would be that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So, but to answer your question about the oddities, because it is true. I mean, this is a case that actually went to a full trial, and so testimony came out that's different than what you would typically see in summary judgment briefing. More specifically,
so what testimony was there that supports irregularly conducted sale or collusive or fraudulent conduct?
Well, the court didn't find that. The court found that the sale was.
But that's your burden.
Right.
So what are you claiming exists to support that, aside from the price, which we've made clear is not the only issue?
Right. So the testimony and evidence that we think is relevant to this inquiry is that the collection agent, National Association Services, had sent a letter to all of the associations for whom it worked, and that's a large collection agent for HOAs. I'm sure you're all aware of that. They're party or involved in many and many of these cases. They sent a letter to their clients, HOAs, stating that lender foreclosures are senior and would wipe out HOA liens. So it was their understanding that, and their belief that, if they conducted an HOA sale and there were a subsequent foreclosure, the deed of trust would wipe out, that if they conducted an HOA lien, there would still be a deed of trust. So they were conducting these liens subject to the deed of trust. That letter went out. There were, let's see what else is significant on that. The auctioneer had the same belief. So I'm going to give you a record site for the letter. It's at AA3672, and in the court proceedings, it was AA3494, page 494 to 495. And the fact that this letter went to their clients is at AA2469.
So why does that matter to what they believe? I mean, when they do a sale, they do a sale. What we're concerned about is, was it done under the law properly? What criers of sales or people think, it doesn't matter. It's up to the title company to sort it out. Then,
yeah. Well, but the idea is that it chills bidding. It creates no motivation on the part of the seller to get more money.
And I understand, Mr. K, but my problem goes back to what Justice Hardesty said. If this was a summary judgment, you probably just won because there's probably a genuine issue of material fact regarding the sale. But it's a bench trial. The judge has heard it. He's heard all this. Apparently, he didn't agree with that argument. And how did he abuse his discretion in his ruling as to this particular issue, or what error of law did he make in your view?
Well, he just didn't consider it relevant. It didn't matter. He didn't believe that what the parties believed had any relevance to the ultimate decision, that the sale, all you have to do is conduct the sale and it's all good. But as this court has observed, if the price is extremely low and there are irregularities, then you have a basis to challenge the sale.
So the irregularity that you're arguing here is the party's belief about the legal effect of the sale.
Right, a mistaken belief as to the legal effect, but this court has ruled that.
You think that constitutes fraudulent behavior?
No, it's unfair, though. We haven't contended that it's fraudulent.
What
we
would contend is that
it's unfair to Wells Fargo to have lost its deed of trust to a sale where none of the parties to that sale believed that they were selling a property that would, in a manner that would be wiping out the deed of trust. If they believed that they were wiping out the deed of trust, then the property in everybody's mind at that transaction would have been, that everybody would have believed that the property was more valuable, and presumably the sale would have fetched a much more significant price, more along the lines of the price that you would fetch at an ordinary trustee sale foreclosure following a default on a mortgage.
I want to ask you a separate question, but I didn't want to cut off your discussion about how the evidence supports a collusive or unfair sale. Did that cover it for now, at least?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said you had a separate question.
I do.
Yeah.
So, unrelated to that point. In looking at the timeline of events, in the judicial foreclosure, the HOA was defaulted on April 2nd. And then, as I understand it, the district court entered declaratory judgment before the HOA sale was conducted, is that right?
The HOA sale was conducted 4 days before the court entered summary judgment in favor of Wells Fargo.
What's the effect, if any, of the default before the judgment?
Well, I mean, the effect of the because the plaintiff in this case intervened in the case, it stopped the case from going from a judgment of foreclosure to a sheriff's sale. And so there wasn't an ultimate final judgment until we got the judgment in this case based on intervention.
Okay.
I mean, let me use a minute to just explain another argument that I think merits analysis on the court's part. This race idea isn't so much of a problem in terms of being a race. I know that's how it's been briefed and how the trial court looked at it. Our position on this is that the result that we got because of the HOA foreclosure sale is less equitable than had the judicial foreclosure proceeded. Under a judicial foreclosure, the HOA's super priority lien would have been satisfied. There's no question about that. The sale should have fetched enough money to pay out the super priority lien. Wells Fargo's lien would have been satisfied. A sheriff would have conducted a sale in a commercially reasonable manner, fetching what would be presumably a higher price. The borrower would have had a right of redemption. The borrower's interests were eradicated by this HOA sale. Borrower would have had a year to try to buy the property back and an opportunity to negotiate with the bank and do all of the things necessary there. And appellee could have acquired the property at a sheriff's sale if it had wanted this property. It would have had to pay more. But that would have been a good and fair and just result. Instead, NAS raced to the foreclosure. It increased its collection costs at every step with every filing of the lien, filing of the notice of default, filing of the notice of sale. It never informed the HOA of the lawsuit. So the HOA was just listening to its collection agent, and the collection agent was essentially acting in its own interest. Following the sale, Wells Fargo received nothing. The money from the HOA sale was used to pay the HOA lien in full and all of the collection costs to NAS. And some money actually went to the borrower, but it was a few hundred dollars. The borrower lost her right of redemption. And all of this, it's sort of an interesting fact that all of this was conducted in a hurry, in part because the legislature had enacted an amendment to NRS 116 that would have required the HOA to stop. The law now is that if there's a notice of default under a deed of trust that gets recorded, that an HOA can't conduct a foreclosure sale until mediation is completed. So, I mean, this was a race, but the race part of it's not what I consider important. What I consider important is that had the HOA let the Judicial Foreclosure Act go, that it would have led to a much more just and equitable result. And the fact that the parties, if we go back to the main idea of what was unfair about the sale, what is the additional irregularity? That irregularity was the fact that all of the parties to the HOA sale really didn't believe that they were selling the property free and clear of the deed of trust, and thus the amount that was fetched was only $4,000. And the property's obviously worth significantly more than that.
Mr. Kay, I know you want to reserve time, but of
course. Yeah, I would like to reserve the balance.
Of course, Wells Fargo knew about the foreclosure, the HOA sale. They were noticed and didn't come, and you could have just come and paid the lien. Would have been done.
They could have, but like the rest of the parties, they too did not believe that the effect of the HOA sale was going to be to wipe out its deed of trust. Had they known that, they surely would have gone. And so everybody was operating under a mistake of the law at this time. And the trial court made that comment that, NAS had that belief, they were wrong, the buyer had that belief, he was wrong, and the bank had that belief, obviously, and it was wrong at the time. But,
Thank you.
So, Thank you.
Morning. May it please the court, John White for respondent Tim Radecki. I'd like to address the issues that you guys have just been talking about with respect to knowledge of the law. And it, correctly speaking, it has absolutely no bearing on this whatsoever. In particular, they claim that the auctioneer had some understanding of what the law was, but there's no allegation that the auctioneer told the participants of the auction, the people that were there to bid, that in fact there was going to be a particular effect on this lien, how it was going to be extinguished or not extinguished.
So, it's law. I'm just curious because this is kind of an unusual case. You're seeing it, but my understanding of the law was when you go to bid at these things on a foreclosure sale, you got to do your own due diligence if you're a bidder, and you got to figure out the title issues and all and make your bids, and you get what you get. You know, if you're wrong, you're wrong, and you pay the price for it. What's your position as far as what the law is when you for people coming in to bid like your client?
Yeah, exactly correct. You have a duty of due diligence to understand. And I think what's important about that, because there's so many cases that are outstanding on a lot of issues regarding recording, I would say, yes, you have to do your due diligence, but what is the database that you're going to rely upon? And that database is the county recorder's office. That's how we record people's interests in property. Now, you can say, well, my client knew that there was a deed of trust. Exactly. He knew there was a deed of trust that was going to get extinguished. Now, they say they had some misunderstanding or vagueness about it. Well, there's a lot of vagueness in it. But people were there to bid on these properties to take title to them, and they understood that there was going to be a fight with the bank because they had a different understanding. But as you stated in many of your cases, you know, if they're operating on a misunderstanding of the law, that's their problem. And they certainly had certain opportunities, plenty of opportunities, to protect themselves. I'm talking about Wells Fargo, simply by paying the super priority portion of the lien, paying off the whole lien. If they thought that there was some unfairness taking place, then they certainly had the courts available to them because they were already in a judicial proceeding. So if you feel that the sale is going to go down and it's going to be adverse to your rights and there's some sort of irregularity taking place, you certainly have the opportunity to file for a restraining order. I have no idea what the basis of the restraining order would be because the auction was regularly conducted. There's no dispute that the notices were sent out. So I'm not sure how that would
happen. What about the price? I know Justice Hardesty commented to Mr. Kahan the price. Let's say the bid was $1, and I don't know what this property is worth, but let's say that's what happened. It's a $1 bid. Is there some point where it becomes so unconscionable in relation to the price that the court has to look at it?
I think it becomes unconscionable only when the price or the first bid is less than what the lien is. In other words, the duty of the trustee is to recover the lien that he's foreclosing on, not their lien. And so you have to open the bid for the amount, the total amount of the lien, and of course my client bid greater than that.
Now in this case, was the amount paid, was it just a super priority portion that was paid to the association, or was there more money above that paid to
them? Well, there was fees and costs that were paid as well. So,
okay.
Of course, my client is the purchaser, not the HOA.
Right. Well, I mean, but it goes to the validity of the sale. I mean, all these issues, how the money was distributed and all that, because the law, at least now, and which you maybe didn't have the benefit, Mr. Kay's client didn't have the benefit at the time, but the law is pretty clear how you distribute the money now,
right,
based on our court cases.
You distribute it a little bit differently now than you did back in 2013, but the important point of that is that the distribution of the money has no impact on my client's rights. That is something outside that. Once he pays the money, he's off the hook in terms of all that.
Right.
What's interesting, and it's a very common argument that they make about, well, so-and-so thought this and so-and-so thought that, which I think is completely irrelevant. That's in arm's length transaction. They're kind of mixing contract theories with auction theories. In contract, maybe you have you can say you have a no meeting of the minds, but that's a negotiated thing versus this is an auction, there's a statutory process, and if you follow it, then it's okay. What's interesting is they always kind of want to know what my client's understanding is. And you really have to go talk to the people who did not outbid my client to find out why they didn't participate or they didn't help it.
Would you consider your client a bona fide purchaser?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's not, there's no evidence that he was aware of any irregularity. He was aware of any lien that would survive the auction. And if he were aware of a lien that survived the auction, then he would be subject to that.
So you disagree, and the only mistake was on behalf of Wells Fargo and their understanding. Your client didn't have the same understanding.
Well, my client, to me, and I did not, I was not in the trial.
Okay.
So I can, based on the transcript, and basically his understanding was there's going to be some disagreement about this, certainly. And I think I know very few people who attended these auctions who didn't think there was going to be some disagreement afterwards. It's just that I had my belief and the bank has their belief. And sometimes the banks even showed up and voiced their belief. But, you know, to say that my client's belief can be used as the basis of the low bid doesn't make any sense because my client is the highest bidder. He's the one who's willing to bid the most at the auction. If somebody dropped out of it, go talk to them about why they didn't outbid my client or why the price is low. You can't come to my client and ask him. It doesn't make any sense.
So your client didn't do anything to further that misunderstanding by indicating in any way that he knew the lien would be?
No, Judge. You show up and you bid and you're done.
Okay.
There's no communication. There's no collusion. There's no evidence of that. There's no even allegation. So I think that covers that area. In terms of the race aspect of it, well, of course it's a race, you know, and the HOA actually started the race. The HOA commenced its collection procedures first, and then the bank came in and tried to beat them to the punch for obvious reasons, because, first of all, the HOA has a duty to its members. It's supposed to get paid. It doesn't have a duty to Wells Fargo other than make sure that they get the notices, which they did. So to say that, well, Wells Fargo doesn't like the outcome because they think that they would have gotten more money, there's no evidence of that, by the way. There's no causal link between the price and anything that they complain about today. There's no evidence to support a causal link between the two. But again, the issue of whether or not they knew what they knew at the time is irrelevant to whether or not my client is a BFP. And so I'm kind of struggling with the argument to begin with about why does it matter who went first and whether they should have waited for the HOA. I see nothing in the law where there's a duty to do that. And in fact, because of this court's decisions, which weren't around back in 2013, but they are now, making it clear that the sub-priority portion of the lien, meaning my client, the HOA's collection fees and costs, would be wiped out by the bank's foreclosure, you've incentivized everybody to be in a race in that sense. And so it's a little hard to say how you would punish somebody for that at the same time. The laws that they talk about with respect to the foreclosure mediation were not in effect at the time, and in any event, would not apply because they were already in a judicial foreclosure, which means they've already concluded the mediation portion of their foreclosure, which opens it up to sale by anybody, any other creditor who's gone through the process. So if there's any other questions,
I have a question that's off the topic you're talking about, but did the district court ever rule on the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act issue that Wells Fargo raised in their motion for summary judgment? And if so, where did the district court rule on that issue?
I don't recall seeing it actually in the findings of fact. I do, to be honest with you, I don't know. Other than, it obviously was something that was raised. I think it was even raised in a motion earlier. But I'd be happy to address any of the issues in that. I simply, as I stated in the brief, simply.
I just wanted to know what the district court ruled on that issue.
I apologize. I can't point to it exactly what they said, other than they did not find it to be.
I couldn't either, so we're in the same boat.
I don't know if there's any deep analysis into it. My analysis of it is simply that it doesn't have any application because there's specific exemptions from sales that are conducted to regularly conducted non-collusive foreclosures, which is what we have here. And besides that, the Uniform Fraudulent Transfers Act deals with a debtor transferring his property to avoid a creditor, and here the debtor is not transferring property. The property is being transferred by a trustee who's foreclosing on their superior lien, and the transfer takes place by operation of law. So it is not a debtor actually moving any property.
Yeah, but it also applies to involuntary transfers, which this would have been an involuntary transfer of the debtor's interest, right?
But not a foreclosure, a regularly conducted non-collusive foreclosure, yeah. And of course not.
That's a different section.
Isn't that a different section? Argument. And of course the asset would have to be an asset that is not encumbered to the extent it's not encumbered by a lien. Of course the HOA has a lien. So. Oh, that was a warning. So, are there any other questions other than that? I really don't have anything to add to that discussion.
Anything additional?
No.
Thank you, then. You are down to 41 seconds. We'll make it an even 2 minutes. And
thank you. Thank you, Your Honors. Okay. A couple of facts. Because the court didn't bind on the issue of the court didn't evaluate the BFP issue because it felt that Wells Fargo hadn't met its burden to show a fraud or unfairness. So there's no findings of fact on that issue. But what's in the record and what was testified to at trial was by the appellee, when he purchased, he didn't think he'd acquired title, and he testifies exactly, I did not have title to the property. That's his testimony about what he thinks happened at the sale. And then he testified as well that he knew there was something to the effect of a DOT encumbering the property and that this is why the price was what it was. So there is...
But he would have title of the property. Anybody who buys and sells title, the question is what exceptions to marketable title are record.
Right, but he didn't... Yes, correct. He had... It's sort of vague as to like what he understood to be by that. But if you tie it into... he testified that he knew there was something to the effect of the DOT.
But you're talking about his subjective understanding. What objective facts did he base that subjective understanding on, and were those the product of anything that anyone on the foreclosing side did or didn't do?
The objective facts that he based that on was his mistaken understanding of the law.
But it wasn't in the notice of default and election to sell. It wasn't in the... notice of foreclosure sale. That, I mean, there was nothing that was done to foster that belief other than his personal subjective belief. Is right, that right?
And my position would be that it doesn't matter. The fact right. that was his subjective belief tainted the sale because it meant that he wasn't bidding for something. He wasn't bidding for property free and clear of a deed of trust. He was bidding for property that he was...
And you're saying it chilled the price.
And it chilled the process. And that combined with the seller's... taking the same position, did the same thing. There were 19 witnesses at the sale.
Well, taking the same position or thinking the same thing but not saying anything.
There's no evidence that they said that at the auction. I don't know if this timer was for my 40 seconds or 2 minutes.
That's the 2 minute time. But Justice Stiglitz, did you have a question? Then your time is up.
Thank you very much.
This matter will stand submitted. We thank the parties for their arguments today in this matter of Wells Fargo Bank versus Redeke.